Blog Talk Radio.
Up as we're heading into 2016, and you know, we've got elections going on all over the place, and there's been a lot jumping off, and a lot of it is a whole bunch of craziness, though. But you know, the circus is in town, people, and get your seats because this is going to be a wild one. So, glad to be back, and you know, glad to have the time to spend with family. So, how was your holiday?
My holiday was okay. I mean, it's a holiday, and you know me. I am not a big holiday person.
Yeah, I know. I didn't get my car. I was looking for my Acura or my Mercedes or my Range Rover, something with a big bow up there, and either you or somebody slacking.
Yeah, you know, so I'm not a big holiday person, but it was better than normal this year. I felt a little bit more of the Christmas spirit, you know, a little bit more of the Kwanzaa spirit. I felt a little bit more of it this year than I normally have, you know, as I'm transitioning, you know, trying to be not Scrooge. But it was okay. I mean, I was sitting there doing a lot of strategizing for how, you know, the next year is going to roll. It'd be an election year, you know, so us being active as an operative, this is going to be a year for us. You know, it's always these even-numbered years. Even though we know elections take place every year, these years are somewhat special because everybody's eyes are on the ball. So that's when the fuckery starts. So we're going to have our eyes on the ball. But, you know, there's some good things coming. You know, there's, you know, downsizing data will continue on in 2016. And since we feel the burn the way that we do, y'all can be almost assured that we will be bringing the burn in its most intense factor. Matter of fact, y'all remember the old Obama call, we fired up, ready to go. I done modified that. It's fired up, ready to go, feel the burn. You know what I'm saying? So we got the fire, it's ready, we going, and now we burning. So let's get ready to do that this year because we know the Iowa caucuses on February 1st, so we're going to be doing a lot of talking about that as we're coming through the upcoming month. Here in Georgia, we get our legislature will be starting. We got some interesting little tidbits coming up in the month as we get ready to go through pre-session and going into the session. There's a lot of things that are going to be going on down south and daily this year. So, I mean, we may even add a show or two to the brand. We never know. We'll see.
Since you mentioned the Iowa caucuses, you know, there is a team of Bernie supporters. You know, you got to love the grassroots for their ingenuity. There is a group of grassroots volunteers. They are getting ready to go on the road to the Iowa caucuses. It's the first in the nation, and these early states are the ones that determine it. So for all of those who are doing phone banking and having call parties, that's great. Keep up the great work. They're calling, the campaign is calling for people to make calls to the early states of New Hampshire, Nevada, Iowa, and South Carolina, and then they're going to do a hard pivot to the rest of the states, such as Georgia, whose primaries are March the 1st. But there's there's a blog post on Blogspot by a gentleman by the name of Amos Elroy, who has put the call out for the grassroots volunteers to go to Iowa to caucus, the caucus process. And we will put the link up on our site, but there's a lot of people, Bernie supporters, who are out there doing the thing. They are doing the damn thing. They are getting ready to blow it up. And not literally, but in a good way. They are getting engaged in the process that we, you and I, Scout, have never seen before. So it's kind of a good thing. If you want to caucus in your own state, hit your should be up on your Democratic Party page. That information is subject to change, people, so follow it quickly. Stay on top of it, learn the process, and because there's really two elections that people need to be concerned with, the primaries and also the delegate nominations. And you can run as an at-large delegate, so just throwing that out there.
Now, we also, as we're talking about Bernie and things to do for Bernie, there is a list of events that are taking place here in the next week, here in the Georgia. I got an email, and I'm sure you got the email too, Stacey, that from the Bernie campaign, particularly if you've contributed money. They've always sent you email blasts asking for more money, which I'm always glad to give. And we also have, they will let you know things that are going on in the campaign. So one of the things, there's four events that came out in the email from the Bernie camp on the 2nd is when I received his email. One is actually taking place today, which is January the 3rd, which is phone banking and buttons for Bernie. And this is in Marietta, East Cobb. So if you are interested in doing phone calls and making buttons and whatnot, and I'll fix it as soon as it loads up here, I'll be telling you exactly what the details for this event is. And I'm sure that if you know, there was probably some RSVPs, but you may want to call and check. Computer, hurry up.
There's like four events, and you can go to MattBernieSanders.com no matter where you are, put in your zip code, and they will pop up. I know there's three call parties that came out of my debate watch party. There's one in McDonough, Georgia, towards the end of January, and I believe Jim Nichols is going to do one, friend of the show, and a guest.
There's one Wednesday, January 6th, Peachtree City. There's another one Thursday, January 7th, in Lilburn. And then there's one on Saturday, January 9th in Forest Park. So, I mean, we will put up these links on our Facebook page so that people can find this stuff a little bit easier. But, so also we have coming up, and okay, I got the information for the Marietta one. The host is Lynn Dunn Mahan. You can find her number. I'm not going to broadcast her number out like that. But she lives on Delkwood Grill in Marietta, Georgia, which is at 2769 Delk Road, Southeast Marietta, Georgia, 30067. There will be a private room in the back of the restaurant. Phone banking parties are fun. So if they want you to come out, they're going to be making buttons. And they also have a link for you to be able to go to the webinar training, which will help people if you want to host your own event. You can do so. So, we all about feeling the burn here. So as we get events, please, if you're going to do a burn event, please make sure that you put that, go to those links and let it be known that you're doing an event so people can come, and therefore we can have these events so people can see on the burning map where these events are taking place, so therefore that they can take part and we can continue to wage our political revolution. What else we got, Stacey?
Let's see. Burn treatment. Oh, Well, let's talk about, well, there's a couple of things. Like CNN, I don't know what's going on over there, but I don't know if people caught CNN this morning. Bernie Sanders was on, and he was also on This Week with ABC. But Dana Bash over there at CNN, it was like she was, you know, they're just trying to bait Bernie and the stuff, and I got to love it because he does not take the bait. On this one, she was questioning him on his health care plan and how he would pay for it, and she just seemed determined to get him to say that he would raise taxes on the middle class to pay for it, and so that, you know, that would give you know, Hillary and the Republicans a reason that he's going to raise your taxes. And, you know, I think there's been a thorough debunking. We all know that he's going to, well, Bernie supporters know that he plans to pay for it by raising taxes, not on middle America, but on those who have not been paying their taxes and putting their burden on you. And the problem with the health insurance plan that we have, or the type of coverage that we have in America right now, is that we've got people, you know, like me. I've got a very nice insurance card in my wallet. I can't afford to use the damn thing because of the co-pays and fees. So he's asking, you know, the largest corporations and the wealthiest to pay their fair share. And yes, this is a redistribution of wealth. Okay, but it's in the right way.
Let's be honest.
And
because we talk about redistribution of wealth, and it's been happening, folks. It's just been going in the opposite direction. And they done fooled us to make them think that as long as the wealth is being redistributed upward toward the 1%, that is good, that is great, that's the way God wants it. God and capitalism, that's how they want it. And it's the perfect model. And if it goes in the other direction, that is socialism and Satan.
You know, it's socialism, and it's the end of civilization as we know it. But we all know about checks and balances. Capitalism cannot exist without its own natural check and balance, and the check and balance to capitalism is socialism or communism. So you need a little bit of this to balance out the excesses in either one, and people need to calm down. You know, this is not going to mean we're all going to gulag, but.
Yeah, I don't want to live in this country, but I don't want to live in a completely capitalist one either. I like the little mixed economy that I was taught about in high school. So.
And we also need to, get out the mindset that one particular political party is superior in economic matters, and that those on the left are ignorant of how economics work. We get it. We just don't see it in the same way, it is not. When people say, well, you know, Republicans are better on economics and national security, that's not true. We just said it so much that people believe it, but when you look at the actual data, it's not true. It's just a bait and switch. But anyway, Dana was trying to set my man up, and he wasn't having it. Big ups to Bernie. He's been in this game long enough. And if you missed the interview, Crooks and Liars, they've got a good play on it. But I think the best thing was, you know, Bernie was in New Hampshire and Massachusetts, and, of course, you know, whenever Bernie comes into town, he blows up the spot for real. And at one rally, there was a Trump supporter. To anybody who wants to bum rush a Bernie Sanders event, just know this. We ain't having it. And it was kind of nice to see, because Bernie was, first of all, Bernie wasn't having it, but the crowd wasn't having it. And it wasn't, you know, they didn't beat anybody up or, you know, escort them out the room, but they kind of shut that whole thing down. So it's a beautiful thing to see. Definitely made me laugh out loud when I saw the video clip. But and we've got the audio of it. Scout, you want to You know, that don't make sure people can
audio, so everybody can, so everybody can share in the joy as we did.
Today in America, the top, here's a Trump supporter worried about Mr. Trump's money.
And they are going wild. They're shutting it down, man.
Well, I say to...
Whoever that person who spoke to the Dollar Bill in my old mic is kidding. They're straying their voice.
I say to Mr. Trump and his supporters that the billionaires of this country will not continue to own this nation.
There it is. And, you know, I got to love Bernie for staying on that. This man is a messaging machine. You know, he always brings it back to what we want to talk about, you know. But that Trump supporter got an education. And just to warn him, you know, you come out to a Bernie event, we ain't going to beat your ass, but, well, there's some people who just might, but I can't take responsibility for that. But for the most part, we're going to shut you down. Mentally, we are going to shut you down. We're not having it. Toys ain't us. We ain't playing with anybody. So that was kind of a good laugh out loud moment for me.
Like a piece of my dirty list that I had. Because we talk about this. We've been talking about this since this campaign started, about how media of Sanders goes when it comes to everybody else and how it goes towards Sanders. Now, if we look at Senator Sanders, Bernie, we have a candidate who is well-known. People act like they don't know who Bernie is. We know. He's the guy who was in the Senate who's always held it down, who's always trying sense to the whole body. And you would think because he's been sitting in the Senate as long as he has, raised as much money as he has, saying the things that he is saying that the media would be all on it, because he's saying some things that we would that a lot of our people consider radical.
Mm-hmm. But it's too far left. You've just gone too far. And that's actually what the mainstream believes in.
All over it. You would think it would be there. But it's not. And it's disconcerting because in America we've always tired of our freedom of press. And I've always looked at freedom of press as being a mechanism to make sure that information got out to the masses. But it doesn't happen that way now. They're doing social engineering with the media by telling us certain things that we ought to believe in, things we ought not to believe in, this, that, and the other. And the only way we seem to be counteracting this thing is through social media, which is, again, it's amazing things that have the word social in it. They do so well at getting things out to the people. Because people who will be shut down by the mainstream have an ability, such as us, to be able to talk about things that the mainstream media doesn't want to talk about because it doesn't necessarily get the ratings. And we know it will get the ratings, but it's not pushing the agenda that is being set for that particular cycle, because we know there's an agenda being set.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that's really disheartening to me, is that the media is completely trying to ignore it, and when they do get it, they're trying to play these little foo-foo games with Bernie, trying to, you know, bait him into saying something stupid or this, that, and this is one of the things that the man is notoriously known for, is not falling for these tricks. He's not a mental underweight here. The man is a very intelligent man. He's a thinker, and he's very calculated in when he speaks. He just doesn't say things to get people riled up. He says, he talks about the truth, and the truth happens to get people riled up.
Mm-hmm.
We got a caller, right, and I think I know who this is, so I'm going to go ahead and take this caller.
Okay.
Hello, caller. Caller.
Oh. Well, they don't want to call.
Okay, I'm going to put you back off, caller. Maybe you just want to listen. Okay.
I'm still call back, and I got a feeling I may know who that was. But just hang in there and try to call us back.
I got them on mute, but they will call back. You know, I get you now. You either hang up or call back.
Yeah, we're not like that.
My second part of my dirty list is I just happened to have been perusing the news. And I see that these folks up in Oregon are acting foolish. Now, I have no problem with Americans standing up for their rights and protesting the government if they feel like the government has their boot in their back. But I do have a problem with this situation because it, again, highlights the differences and how justice is meted out in this country. If I as an African American man was to go down to downtown Atlanta today and take over the federal or take over any doggone state park office or whatever, national park, if I went down to the little White House right now and I sat on it down in Warm Springs, Georgia, I can about promise you that I'm going to meet a very, very violent response.
I'll be up there calling for justice for my friend.
If I was armed, I would be a hashtag. Y'all would be like, remember Scott.
You know what we'll say? They didn't have to do them like that. That's what we'll be saying. They didn't have to do them like that.
It's my children.
So they will light your ass up, and you know they will.
If my children were running around in the park playing cops and robbers or cowboys and Indians or playing war as I did as a child, that would be a dangerous activity for them today.
They're not children. They look grown.
Yeah, they look grown.
Okay. I know the baby's 8 years old, but the baby looked grown, damn it, and we had to shoot him because it clearly was a clear and present threat. And
I
say that with the most sarcasm that I can muster.
But I can get some white men who can go take over a ranger station at a national park.
It's freedom.
If y'all sitting there with cameras looking at the damn place, really? Or better yet, we can go to Stone Mountain, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And we can have a bunch of Yahoos who want to protect the Confederate flag, be on top of that mountain, be confronted by law enforcement, and them some bitches can put their hands on their guns, and all the police can do is say, whoa, wait, buddy.
Mm-hmm. But we're equal. We're equal, and the system works for everybody. And all lives matter.
Yes.
This is
some straight bull. And if anybody who wants to try to make it in the context of something else, you are lying to yourself. Because guns are involved in both places. And I asked a friend of mine who is a conservative who deals with guns, they own firing ranges, they sell weapons, and we had this conversation. And I asked what happened to talking folks down. I remember growing up, any time there was an armed confrontation, you had the negotiator. Matter of fact, there was a movie at one point in time called The Negotiator.
Yes, there was.
And this was a skill that police departments coveted. You had this person who can go in and talk the sugar out of shit and walk in and give themselves up, and you save all the hostages, no fires, no shots fired. Nowadays, it's the damn sniper team that is the damn hero. They can go in there and kill a person with one bullet and take the chance that there might be multiple bad guys in the room, and the moment that one drops, he kills everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so it used to be that the police, when they came up on you, it was like, freeze, hands up. And if you ran, they told, if you ran from them, they would first tell you, freeze or I will shoot, and gave you a chance to drop your shit and stop. No,
you say give you a chance. They don't give you a chance no more. As long as they put the words out there, they think that due diligence is done, and it's time to go all Johnny or Belinda Blaze on your ass. And that's
because
the problem that people are not seeing.
And this is the problem that I have with Tamir Rice, and I've been saying this, and I've said this a thousand times. Police cars are on radio. They're capable of talking from you to you from inside your car. If they thought he had a gun and he was dangerous, they could have parked 15 to 20 feet away or even farther away and be like, young man, drop that in your hand. Drop your weapon. If he ran, you tased his little ass.
Mm-hmm.
But they ran jam up on it in their car like Rambo. Hell, the military don't even run up on the spot like that.
You're former military. My husband's former military, and they're like, you know what? When you have military people saying this is that's that bullshit right there.
Osama bin Laden killed 3,000 Americans. Osama bin Laden killed 3,000 Americans, and we snuck up on his ass. Okay, we snuck up on him. We didn't kill everybody in the house either. There were people that were taken prisoner that night. There were children and stuff who were set off in the room and you should be quiet. And they snuck upstairs. Hell, matter of fact, when he called out, somebody spoke back to him and pushed to him. This, you know, said, Osama, blah, 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 whatever the hell they were. And he stuck his head out and then when they popped him.
But,
you know what I'm saying?
But, okay.
Come on, African-American child, Milo, even if you thought it was a pistol, with a pistol, when you are a police, there was two police officers with bulletproof vests, with 9mm, probably a shotgun and some ARs in the trunk, with a gun, scared you. If that's the problem, black people, we've been misusing our power. If they are that damn scared of us, we need to unite.
That's the whole message. Just being an African American or a black person, it's you inspire fear. They can't articulate it in any way. They won't say, well, it's because you're black, but you know, it's clear that being black is a threat in America, and what's stunning and sometimes amusing as hell is to watch people dance all around it and avoid saying that one thing. I'm not racist. If you have to start a sentence out with that, you are racist. Let's just establish that. Whatever's going to come out your mouth, whatever follows after that, ain't going to be wrong, and you will get clapped back.
So you guys, we got superpowers that they have to make sure they get to very quick. They have to come in and they have the gamma rays, they have to come in and they have Vader in the room, they do everything. I mean, they call it, what's the Order 66 when they killed all the Jedi? They turn the clones on and be like, Order 66, kill all the Jedi, men, women, and children. Fuck it. Because if we get loose, just one of us survives. It's all over for the evil empire.
I mean, when black people are saying, you know what, I'd like to point this out, I think you need to listen. Right now, Twitter is going ham on this whole thing, and it's kind of there's a whole lot of sides to this story that kind of brings out a bit of dysfunction and hypocrisy in everybody. You know, you got You know, this all started because the ranchers were burning, they were burning invasive vegetation to, on their property, and the government came in and, you know, gave a father and son some charges, and then they came back and said, well, we're going to give you some more charges because we don't think that was harsh enough, which kind of makes me feel some type of way in their favor. Y'all can come get at me if you want. But if we're going to keep this 100, let's keep it 100. So I do have a problem with the state. I have a problem with the state coming in and saying, you know what, they need more charges. But the response, I think what people need to understand, this is more of the response of law enforcement. You got folks bringing them supplies coming in and out. They saying, we'll be here for a minute. Now, in Atlanta, we had Occupy Atlanta. We couldn't even sit in a public park without getting bum rushed. We can't even, you know, we're locking up homeless for just sleeping out, and you got folks with guns.
In this country, because you're absolutely right, that these people are holed up and people are able to take in food to them. So give, as a matter of fact, we call, you know, these people are commit, these people that took over a federal piece of property and they own. Some shit like happened like that back in the 1860s. We call that shit the Civil War.
But no, this is freedom. And, you know, get that red, white, and blue erection up. You know, and
if we was in Atlanta and we were downtown occupying a park and folks tried to come give us food, oh, that shit wouldn't be happening. And we would be unarmed.
That's not going to happen.
We would be unarmed and we could not defeat. So that let me know right there. And America won, and this is a part of the argument nobody ever wants to talk about. But there's one, we talk about how we respect, you know, the gun rights, okay? But and you pointed this out on several occasions, Stacey, that there are certain parts of the Constitution that was not meant to apply to certain people in the beginning, and some people still remember that and are going to allow it to, and still want it to be that way. So as an African American, regardless if I have a gun or not, you feel like if you, particularly if you're a strict constitutionalist, you feel like that when we wrote this shit, it wasn't meant for you to begin with, so we don't recognize. But if a white man picks up, if a white man picks up his gun and decides he wants to stand up against the government, he is in the spirit of our forefathers. Well, if I pick up a gun, I'm in the spirit of my forefathers too, but that was called a slave rebellion.
That's another part of it. Why, you know, when we saw the riots in Ferguson and Baltimore and everywhere, you know, it was like you, I, and every other black person, it was our duty to tell people, y'all just quit now. Y'all calm down.
Okay.
Y'all
back.
Don't tear that shit up. Don't do that. Just go on and sit down somewhere and just sing some hymns and you
Let's
know, just go on, and pray, go on and pray on it.
Okay, Carla? Carla, are you there?
Are you talking to me?
Yes, we are. I know who this is.
Hello, Down South and Dirty.
Hello. This happens to be one of my road dolls, Miss Connie Ogletree, a labor activist in our own right. Only one of my friends whose portrait is the only person I know whose portrait is sitting across from the White House in the Department of Labor
as
building.
We
but
every
street.
And
so you've been listening to the show. We haven't really got into the real article, but what do you want to comment on, dogs?
I'm just commenting on the whole show in itself. I'm just happy that it's out here. And I know that it's a format that my as she said, Road Dog has always wanted. But I just want everybody out there to know in radio and TV and Wi-Fi, whatever land that they're listening to via the airwaves and the byways, that this is real. This is very real.
I did not pay for this, people. I did not pay for that endorsement. I did not pay for that. I just want to put that out there. This is not a paid endorsement.
Look, like my best male friend said, I'm just putting it out there.
Okay?
I'm
We're just putting it out there. So let me ask you, what do you Well, let me ask you, since I got you on the phone, have you heard about, you know, the good white folks up there in Oregon hunkered down with the guns?
No, I'm sorry. You know, sometimes I'm like an ostrich. I put my head in the sand because it's all too much. It's all too much. And it makes
your head hurt. I know one thing you know about, and that's Bernie Sanders, because she's a black gunner out there off of Campbellton Road, folks. You'll see her car with her
Bernie stickers. I'm in Greengrass, folks. Come see her.
And we're going to try to do some things next weekend out her way. So look for the link to be up on the BernieSanders.com website, map.berniesanders.com, as we get ready to set it off on the south side. We might, look, we're going to try to get Killer Mike. We're going to shoot high. We're going to get Killer Mike to come out sooner or later.
Killer Mike's an arbor, and barbers and cosmetologists in themselves are a foundation of our black community. That's our media.
Tell them,
girl. That's our media from grassroots.
Exactly.
That's our gathering spot, and we're going to hit them up.
I'm going to view the salon.
Yeah, I mean, we chop it all up. That's our therapy. That's our meeting place.
We're going on up in that church any day.
And, you know, there's a lot brewing in there that we need to cut through and just stop all that noise, because we got some brothers in the barbershop that are voting for Trump, and when you ask them why, they don't know. They just think he comes out like
a G. You know what I'm saying? They vote for Trump, they vote for Hillary, and they don't know why. And what is
really
she doing
don't.
For you and your cat? What is she doing to uplift the I don't want to preach. I'm going to get
she
back
saying,
off.
I can tell you, her husband going around saying, my bad, we so sorry. All that stuff that... You know, the mass incarceration, welfare reform, defense of marriage,
I'm
all of that. We're bad, but we'll do better.
Because we didn't know it was going to eventually trickle down to our people. Because, yeah, y'all got some folks in there dirty down, too.
See?
That's a little harsh. That's just a little harsh.
That's my people, Scout. That's my people right there.
Mm. I'm going to get a collection check. Word right there. They out there telling us lies. Teaching us false doctrine. They trying to bring it to us. But we got to say it. We got to say it sometimes. I don't understand it. They can't get an amen.
Amen. And on that note, I'm about out in the. You know what? I forgot my thoughts, so I ain't gonna even try to play it off.
See, she does that. She does that. I mean, you know,
hey,
we didn't know the.
No. I'm glad. I'm glad you said that. In the words of our one of our foremost black leaders, as they say. The Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., we coming for that check.
We coming. And
I'm
going to
need
that
money from you. I'm going to need all my interest and my check.
We don't want the government. We don't want the government.
Peace out.
All right. Well, thank you, Connie, for calling in. But
I'm
cooking for that check.
We need that. I need that. See, because we ain't going to have much more time to get this thing together. And if you don't come around this time, it might be when I come back, you might not know what to do.
Well, Rod, ain't no money. That's what they'll tell you when you come back around. Ain't no more money.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I know Bernie got money. Bernie people put $5, $10, $15, $20 here and there. That ass up.
Boom! And what did we do this weekend? We raised $7 million. We took them over the top.
73.
So,
I know I did.
In the black community where I live, they have several barbershops, beauty shops, and they have one and a half major hair shop where they sell their hair and make most of their money out of this community. If we can get in chat with them people and make them burners, burning coming through, even if this is Georgia, because these folks got folks in other places.
Roger.
Yeah, I think Bernie's gonna he's gonna break a whole lot of conventional wisdom that a lot of people have held about how to run an election and how to win. I kind of love it because I'm the person, I always root for the underdog, you know. I'm always
the underdog.
Right, exactly.
I am the underdog.
So I see a lot of kind of Bernie and me and some of the things that I said. People are like, oh, you know, we got all this big money. Man, we got money too, but who do you think makes big money? Your money makes big money.
Thank you. You got your big money off the little money that makes the big money.
So all we got to do is redirect that little money, and we did that.
What gets me in this world, and I've seen this in my adulthood, in our community, the community that I still live in, people don't value small pieces of money.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot get to $1 if you ain't got a penny first. You got to at least have a penny or gathering of pennies. You either got to have one penny or five to have a piece of money.
You know,
and
well, it all starts out, you know, whether it's money that falls or money that jingles. It adds
from
up.
From the bottom up. There you go. Don't tell me.
All right, dog.
Make a dime. All right, I'm going to continue listening. Happy New Year, and I'm out.
Okay, thanks
all
for calling in, dog. All right, well, you heard that, and this is, you know, and I must reiterate, I did not pay for that endorsement, but that's one of my dearest friends. And
but at the end, she said some good stuff that, you know, we really don't. We in our community don't respect little money. We don't respect little money. If you know, we sit there and talk about it, and this is one of the things that we look at from the Bernie Sanders campaign model. If we were taking operating that same motion when it comes to building up economic power in our community, $5 and $10 mean something. But when we get ready to talk about business and doing things and growing, everybody wants you to, if you can't put down some thousands, everybody think you ain't in the game. But you'd be surprised, a bunch of folks in a collective putting $5, $10 down in a co-op. Let's say we wanted the grocery store. That's an empty shopping complex. If the community was to get together and we could get some people together in a trustworthy situation, in a trustworthy deal where we could get those $5 and $10 in, we could damn open up these shopping complexes. And also get some money back. Everybody split it up in the dividend. Shoot, get some jobs created, but no, we don't want to do that because
talking about unity. You're talking about unity. Now, you know, that's about as elusive as a purple speckled unicorn and probably one of the few things we can do, and I don't care if it's black or any other community. The only thing we can do in unison is line dancing or the electric slide. That's about it, but that's our problem.
Our Latino brothers and sisters, at least the first generation ones, can live 15, 20 in a house and nobody complain about it till everybody done came up.
Right. But that's the thing. You know, we will sit there and you've heard people in the black community talk about, well, they come to take our jobs, they doing this, they doing that, and the Asian community as well because they keeping their head down low. But
they
do the thing. They come here, and even our Jamaican, you know, other brothers and sisters from, you know, Jamaica and Africa, they come in here, and they're doing this. They're not getting anything special. They're making the system work for them. And while American blacks, you know, African-American blacks are hollering about somebody need to come give us something or we ain't got or whatever, and it's time, you know, on that issue, there's time where we have to look at ourselves and kind of, you know, use what everybody else is doing out there and stop complaining about somebody needs to give us something. Ain't nobody coming to give you a damn thing.
And that's a show coming.
Yeah, that's a show coming. But let's talk about, there's one more thing we wanted to talk about. There's a special election in Atlanta.
Yes,
going on. Representative Simone Bell, before we get into our main event. Representative Simone Bell is leaving, and there is a special election coming up in about a week and a half in the city of Atlanta. This is for a House District 58, and we've got three challenges running in the race. So, Scout, tell us all about this race. And
we got three candidates. Now, I'm only familiar, I'm familiar with two. The third one I'm not as familiar with, and I'm doing my homework on. But we, the two that I'm familiar with is Ralph Long and Park Cannon. Ralph Long used to hold this seat, or what was what evolved into this seat, a couple of years ago. And when they did some redrawing of the maps, the Republican placed him and Simone Bell into a primary against each other.
The Hunger Games primary.
Right. And so this was maybe this was four years ago. And so Simone Bell won. The Longs have been attempting to regain this seat ever since, because Erica ran against Simone, Erica Long, Ralph Long's wife ran for this seat. And what was it, in the last cycle, 2014. Not able to regain the seat for the family or for their constituencies. So we got that. And then we got a political newcomer by the name of Park Cannon. Park Cannon comes out of the feminist activism crowd. And she needs to be, we need to be watching her very closely, because there could be some potential in Park's campaign. So I'm watching, and I'm the first person at this, Kwame. I don't know what Kwame's last name is. I'm learning, trying to get on top of this, because it's been developing quite
You may not know about him, but I tell you one thing. He's deploying the VistaPrint strategy, which is get you a whole bunch of campaign signs and just throw them up everywhere. He's got some on 166, which somebody needs to tell his campaign team, you can't do that. You cannot put signs in the right-of-way.
And that's two cats running for sheriff that got the same signs. I was headed to my mom's house. My mom lives off of Sylvan, and I was headed over there the other day. And that irks me, political candidates running for office this year.
Well, they're arguing, and then they never come get their signs either.
The instantaneous way for me not supporting you is me seeing your signs on the highway. Their signs are not supposed to be on the highway. If I see that, you're breaking the rules. If you can break that very simple rule, or you allow your people to break that very simple rule, then I'm having some problems with your candidacy. Because I know you're not going to follow the simple rules of the House or the Senate or whatever other governmental entity that you are trying to run for office for. So do not let me catch your signs on the highway. If it's a highway, then limited access, it does not need to be there. Don't need to be on the ramps, on ramps, off ramps, coming on and off. Why? You're putting your people at danger just to place them damn signs.
And plus, they're not supposed to be there. And you will see some signs, particularly on the south side of Atlanta. You'll see, I don't know if they got billy goats or whatever to put these signs up, but if you find the sign, there's a Facebook page called Campaign Shame. Take a picture, upload it to Campaign Shame, and call them out, because those signs are not supposed to be there. They're all over I-20. They're all over 285, 166.
But I will have a more up-to-date question to this race come next
week.
Now,
wait a minute. Now, Representative Bell has come out and endorsed Ms. Cannon, correct?
Yes, that is true.
And
that
that's
true.
Kind of, you know.
I can tell you the truth. I'm not going to lie. I'm, you know, watching it. I'm leaning, if I could vote in that one, I would be leaning Park Cannon myself. So let's see.
Full disclosure, both of us, we know the Longs.
Yeah, I like you. I like Ralph.
personally.
If I like Erica. You know,
personal and then there's politics. And for me, you know, personally, you know, I think they're a great couple. They definitely, you know, when you talk about black love, you got it right there.
Yep.
Ralph, they definitely are a couple that embodies that. But politically, this may be the right people in the wrong districts. And I think that, you know, personally, I like Park Cannon and watching her race and what she's saying. I think she's more in tune.
I would rather see Ralph running for a city council seat myself.
Yeah, but you know what? Hey, we're just the little people. We don't know nothing.
I got a caller that's been holding here for a while. Let's see when this out of a 706 number.
Yay.
Greetings.
Hello, caller. Greetings.
Hi.
Greetings, caller.
I'm calling from near Athens, Georgia. My name is Elena. And you all have a very interesting show topic. I'm just listening. My question to you is, who do you think we should be supporting at this point for president?
Well, I think that's an easy answer for us. We're going to tell you Bernie Sanders.
Okay. I was feeling him too.
What's the question for you? Why are you feeling him?
Well, he seems a little bit more progressive. I was very happy when he addressed mass incarceration, and I noticed no one has really addressed that during election time, and I was very impressed with that aspect of him. However, I would like to, if I could have a conversation with him, I would ask him what does he think about changing the political status for African Americans to indigenous, which would allow us some form of self-governance, autonomy, and also reparative remedy. I would like to get his position on that.
Those are interesting and very provocative questions. Because I was like one of those who were like, we need to become refugees so we can get protection because, you know.
Well, we are
in
refugees.
Right. So we're not designated officially as refugees.
Yes. Remember during Hurricane Katrina? They called us, came out and called us refugees. Yes, ma'am.
That was just for temporary media purposes only. They didn't mean that shit when you came for the money. Then all of a sudden you were Americans.
It's arbitrary
how they apply those labels to us. And we were a refugee back then. But then once we started talking about can we have this, they were like, well, nah, you Americans.
So we need something really permanent.
Yeah,
What really happens with us African Americans is because we are in an improper political status. That has a legal, political, and monetary connotation to it. We don't control the tax dollars. We matriculate $1.3 trillion per year, but we don't control it, and we don't direct that wealth and that power and those resources back to our communities, and that has an impact on our development. So those are questions that I would ask potential candidates. Where are they? Because we're suffering in the black community. We are suffering because we have no control.
I would agree with you on that, but that question, the latter part of the question, is not really for a candidate to answer. It's for the black community. It's one that needs to be asked to the black community and see what answers we get. I mean, for example, we called for boycotts during Black Christmas. How many people stood by the boycott? There's been movements going on for decades to get black people to buy black. I mean, when you look at what people wear, you know, who makes True Religion jeans? Who makes Nike?
Exactly.
Our consumer habits, there's no candidate in the world who is going to be able to do something to address that part of the equation. That is up for the black community themselves to do, and we have to start.
Even another part of the about those companies, who do you have any African American suppliers? Because I mean,
right.
my family does packaging. We have a manufacturing company. We do packaging, and I can look at certain companies and tell you that that certain company that we provide the packaging for, we design the packaging for, and I would be more apt to buy those companies. Stop their products because I know they came to a very visibly African American, and I will I even say female led, business and to do their business. And we need to ask these questions. Do you even have any suppliers? Even though the company may be white, rent, are any of your suppliers African American?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. Very good
material.
Question.
How do you do B2B with African American and minority owned companies? That's a question because we always are not going to make the car, but are we making any of the parts to the car? And if we're not making parts to the car, then that's maybe something we as an African American community need to be looking at is how do we get in the process of becoming suppliers? Because guess what? We have lots of barbershops, we have lots of hairdressers, we have lots of restaurants, but very few of us are actually making things other than hair products.
And you know what? This is a good segue into our main topic for today. Our show this week is about political messiahs and how we created them. And, you know, you raised a good point about the supply lines, and that kind of translates into elections because we often look for presidential candidates and we expect them to be elected and we expect everything. We're going to wake up the next day and it's going to be like a Disney movie with the birds and everything singing and all the wildlife, the flora and the fauna comes out, and it's just a beautiful day. And we kind of did that with President Obama.
Yes.
We did that with President Obama. A lot of us, you know, we just went there and got caught up in it, and those same people are now sitting around looking like they sucked on a bag of lemons. Because they didn't get what they expected. And one of the things we tend to attach quite a bit to political candidates on what they can and can what they can do. And we forget about that supply line, which is kind of going to lead us into next week's series of shows. We're going to start talking to people who are part of the bench. But, you know, when Scout and I were talking about the show, you know, we were like, we're seeing and hearing a lot of things around us, and we don't want people to get it all twisted going into 2016. And we have to look back at the lessons from President Obama's election, you know, because Bernie Sanders is saying the same things in terms of, I can't do this alone.
Exactly.
And I think that's one of the things that we forgot the most, and a lot of things that we lament about were because you can holler and scream on social media all you want.
Mm-hmm.
I do it a time or two myself. But in terms of making demands and speaking truth to power, trust me, these elected officials are not sitting there looking through their Twitter feeds and their Facebook pages and saying, you know what, I got to do something because, you know, so-and-so posted something about me on Facebook. They're not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Until you threaten them at their actual their crux of power, if you can't threaten to either defeat them or to make their governance untenable or cut off that money, they really don't care. And there are a lot of people who have not raised their voice because of this kind of messianic complex that we've attached to certain political figures. And we think they're going to come in and save all of this. So we wanted to talk about that a little bit and kind of weed through it. You know, I voted for President Obama twice. You know, the first time, And I'll admit, and I won't apologize to a damn person about it. Part of it was because he was black. I'm not apologizing for that. I never will. And I don't think any black person should. White people got to vote for their team all the time. So this was a chance for us to do that. Did we get everything out of the black community, that the black community should have added President Obama. I can also say that, no, we didn't. But I cannot hate the man because of it. It's just like my children. My children often do dumb things. They often do things that I have to register my disapproval. There are things that they do that I have to chastise them for, but I don't love them any less at the end of the day.
No.
I look at politics the same way. And there, I really, really get a little irritated at some people who are like, you know, and I hear this, you know, out of white and blacks on both sides. I can't stand Obama, this and that. You know what? Maybe I just don't operate on that platform. I don't know the people, so I can't say I hate them. I can say I don't like a lot of their policies. I don't care for Clinton. I don't care for some of the things that President Obama has done, but the difference is that I will try to speak out about it. And when you do, you get attacked like you are an enemy of the state.
Mm-hmm.
So is this a messiah complex that the American public has, and does it help add to the apathy?
That's true.
One of the things we have to ask our question about is that it's not just something that we do on the left. It's also something that's done on the right. If you look at the presidential candidates today, everybody who's backing a certain candidate, we all are thinking that that particular candidate can solve all of our problems, well, at least the majority of us are. Those of us who know better because we've been in the game for a while, we're supposed to be supporting somebody that can possibly go in and work with the people that are already there, possibly bring forth some of the change. You got Trump supporters who are hoping and praying that this man who is starting all this hate can actually do his office and make America great again. And I'm sitting there going, okay, why is us being number one so important to us being number one to the rest of the world when it's not important for us to be number one to ourselves?
Exactly.
Because this is the thing. Every time we talk about America being great, it's in greatness of dominating other people. But we need
exactly
to be able to control and deal with ourselves and being number one to ourselves. You know,
exactly.
We talk about spreading democracy. We talk about spreading the American dream to the rest of the world. But if you're an American,
do we
do those things for ourselves? You know,
no.
America can't be number one in these situations till we have racial equity in our country, till we have economic equity in our country, till we are willing to sit there and say, okay, we have a Bill of Rights. Are those Bill of Rights being equally applied the way the 14th Amendment says it's supposed to be equally divided across everyone? Do we truly have a melting pot that we espouse? Are we living up to E Pluribus Unum? And that would make America great. But see, if you listen to candidate Trump, he's not talking. He doesn't talk about E Pluribus Unum because he has no.
He's
on the bottom of the dollar, but he doesn't understand that so many becomes one.
He sounds like a fascist.
He is a fascist.
His father is a German. Now, I ain't got nothing against the German people. I speak the language. I love the language. And, I have nothing against them, but his father comes from that same political mindset. If you dig back in their history, he comes from a group of people who had that same political mindset, who were anti-Semitic, who believed that, you know, Germans are superior, this, that, and the other. They led to the rise of Adolf Hitler.
Yes, yes, yes. And that's
so,
the spirit I feel.
We're looking at our own one here. We're looking at our Hitler right here. And we got to stop to it. And then if we look at Clinton, I mean, she's a Democrat, and I'm a member of the Democratic Party, and if she was to happen to win the nomination, I would most likely support. But at the same time.
Don't worry about him, sis. I got him.
but at the same time, I have problems with how she's running her race. I mean,
exactly.
To me, that's my biggest problem is how she's running. There's an assumption that I deserve it. It is my turn. I've earned this already.
Yeah.
Now she give it to me. No, this is America. You get a chance every 4 years to make this argument, and you failed the last time. And just because you failed the last time doesn't mean it's your turn. You still got to be the right person for the right job at the right time. You may have missed your mark.
To me, Hillary's spirit has changed. Her spirit, when Clinton was in office, she had a decent spirit. But as she's gotten older, her spirit has changed towards the people. Her spirit has changed, period. I don't like some of the foreign policy she's co-signed on, and I don't like what has happened in Haiti that her family has been a part of. So I'm very disappointed with Hillary, because I was always a fan of Hillary. I was a fan of Clinton, but I was more in love with Hillary than I was of Bill. Because of Hillary, I supported Bill Clinton. But over time, as I started really looking at her foreign policy and looking at how her spirit has changed towards the people and some of the decisions she's made, I'm going to have to go with Bernie.
This is because she feels entitled to this seat. And this is the thing.
Spirit.
Nobody is entitled to be president of the United States. An entitlement spirit is a selfish spirit.
That's right.
And so this is not about the American people. This is about her fulfilling a dream. And, yes, America, it is time for America to have a woman president. I have
we
no
need
problem
that energy.
Saying that. But she is not it. If you would have put Elizabeth Warren,
right,
I would have been running all the way down and said, yes, we're going to have both a woman president. But this is not it. Because I need a woman. Anybody, not only if it's a woman, an African-American, or an old white Jewish dude from Brooklyn, New York, who represents the state of Vermont, I need for you to have a spirit that is about sincerity.
Exactly.
You truly believe
exactly.
You can go and change the system, and you're not just doing it because you got a list that you got something you need to check off your bucket list.
Exactly.
And this is she's been coveting this seat since before Bill was governor of Arkansas.
That's right. That's right.
Well,
that's
this is part of the dynastic politics that has been pretty much the doctrine of the Democratic Party. And, you know, there's been a lot of conversations, you know, I've been a part of them on Facebook, you know, where people are, they're pissed off and they're threatening not to vote for Clinton in the general. I can't be mad at people. I may not agree with it as part of the strategy, but at this point, I've kind of given up because I'm not going to blame these voters, because it is the party who has created these conditions and who are standing by watching silently while their party breaks into full-blown anarchy and they're doing nothing about it. They're doing nothing to stop it. If they really want to win, which is what their focus is, if they want to win, you go with the next bus smoking. And it looks like Hillary's is starting to run out of gas again, because this is the same thing we saw with, you know, Obama versus Hillary in 2008. This race is taking the same trajectory, but the party is being
cheap, and we got to be prepared for it, you know, because
right,
the thing is, we have to be ready for it, because underestimated Barack Obama as they was going into Iowa. And we sit there and we know all about, you know, vote, you know, NGP gate. And me being the person that uses NGP, I was quite surprised at the reaction that was taking place. But we all know that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who she wants to be president of the United States, which is completely, and the system is broken to the point now that we can't even talk about the bylaws of the Democratic Party, because we all are breaking them now. I'm included. Because the other side, I'm not going to keep my hands behind my back for my candidate while y'all are thinking that y'all are going to tie y'all and y'all fighting for yours, and we trying to follow the rules, and we're watching you circumvent them while you're doing this. We got to fight back, too. So these are the type of things that we have to watch out for, because they expect for other people to play by the rules while they break the rules. And
they'll change them midstream. They will change them in the middle. You know, they'll be like, oh, these are the rules that I just, these are the new rules that we just made up. And that's the problem, and which goes against what you're supposed to stand for as a party. And you can't say you're fighting for my right to choose as a woman. You can't say that you are standing up to protect my right to vote. You can't say you are inclusive when you are pulling off an election that goes against every single thing that you allege to stand for. And that kind of goes back to the thinking of, you know, Clinton thinking, you know, their mindset that she's earned it in some way and that she's entitled to have it. So that reminds me of that that video by Father Fledger in Chicago that went viral, you know, with President Obama when he talked about Hillary felt entitled because of white privilege, which I still think is true. You know, there was a lot of racial undertones riding in that race. But there's a mindset with the American electorate that so-and-so should have it because they're entitled to it, or that if X gets elected, all of this is going to change overnight. And we have to get out of that mindset because it damages us in the long run, because people who get really excited and engaged and then they find out, no, the earth doesn't change its, you know, it doesn't start coming up in the west and setting in the east and reversing everything that was done automatically overnight. That doesn't happen because the office of the presidency at first, it comes with limits. You're not a dictator. You're not a czar. You're not emperor. You're not supreme ruler. Your biggest problem, and a lot of the biggest problems that we face, come from the local and state levels.
Right.
And also, the biggest thing people need to understand is that the president does not make laws. Congress does.
Exactly.
Because we want to
change,
we have to elect congressmen. We have to elect, and that's one of the things that we're going to be concentrating over the next couple of weeks, is talking to those elected officials, people who are running, and even elected officials, who are supportive of Sanders' policies, because we need to elect people and keep electing people who feel that this is the way to go. Because I'm not saying that we need to take over houses, but you know, chambers, because I still believe there's a balance to be had when we have conservatives and progressives in the same house, because they balance each other out. But there need to be enough of us that balance is restored. And we can move forward with true progressive policy by electing true progressives. Don't let everybody who says the word progressive coming out their mouth just take that for face value. Go in there and test that. See what they truly believe in. Because if you say you're progressive and you can't support, you know, a living wage, I got a problem. If you're progressive and you can't support the rights of people to collectively bargain in their workplace,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to question you. If there's anything that you say that you want to do that takes rights from other individuals, regardless if those rights are repugnant to you and they're established rights today, I'm going to question you, because this is not about us forcing our way and will upon other people. It is about coming to a consensus and making good law that is crafted that benefits all Americans, even those who are on the conservative side. Us progressives are looking to also make their lives better, not destroy their way of life. So
well,
we have to be looking at
But there's a lack of, that's kind of difficult to do, because there is a lack of mutual respect of ideas, particularly ones
right.
that are differing ideas. You know, Scout, both of us have conservative friends. The one thing I do appreciate with them is that we can at least have a discussion about the issue. We may differ on solutions, but we can agree on certain things as being wrong. We have people who automatically put their back up because X said it. I'm against it because the left said it. I'm against it because the right wants. You know, and this has got to stop. But that, I don't even think we're not even near ready to do that. And it's sad to say, it really is sad to say, that we have become so polarized and so incapable of talking to each other, incapable of governing ourselves. And part of that is, you know, we have, elections have become this like blood sport.
mm-hmm.
that we go through every 4 years, and, you know, this person's going to do that, and, you know, vote for me, I'll set you free. And, you know, for me being an advocate and an activist, and I go out there, and I got to deal with these people who are simply pissed off. They're pissed off, they're jaded, they're disillusioned, they're broke, they're disappointed, they're frustrated, they're just mad. And they're mad because they've been told, if I vote for this person, I'm going to fix everything. I'm going to fix, you know, it's like, Oprah, you get a car, you get a car, you get a car. And sometimes you got to look at people and say, I can't do all of that. What I can do is try to work to get this to happen. I think that's one of the biggest appeals of Bernie Sanders, in that mm-hmm. he does not, he will tell you in a minute, I can't do that, I need your help. That's what the president told us. Some of us listened, some of us didn't, and some of us thought that we were being, like, really, really conscious, and by just being mad and everything he says is something we got to be against, you know, and that's not helping our cause either, because you can't be in a perpetual state of rage 24/7. If you think somebody else is doing something wrong, you're going to have to bring something to the table, or you're just, you know, we just know we'll come to you when we want to find out what people are mad about, but you're not going to be productive in terms of moving us forward.
Well,
no,
I'm
know, you're just mad.
I think that
I'm politicians, and me being from the operative side and working on campaigns and whatnot, you know, I really always try to speak when I'm at the table with the candidates and the teams coming up with messaging, because usually I'm working field, that we have to go out and listen to our constituents. You, when you're coming up with your platform should not come 100% from your head. It should be 25% from your head, 75% from your constituency. And how you do that is you go out and listen to them. Your every bill that you write, most of the stuff that you back should be stuff that the people in your community have come to you and said, hey, we don't like this, we elected you, we need for you to take care of it. And your first word should not be, I can't do that. Your first word should be,
mm-hmm.
let's work them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't like it doesn't mean that it automatically gets shut down, because you were not sent to that seat to do your will. You were sent to that seat to do the people's will. So if I want you to look at something, regardless of how stupid it might be, I need for you to prove to me that it's stupid. That's what I hired you for.
And we need to see them more. The public needs to see them more, because we don't get to see them until it's election time. I think they need to make themselves more available to us so we can support them.
Here in Georgia, I'll give shout out to certain representatives that I know. They go out there and see their people. One, she was just elected to the House. And she has had so many town hall meetings that I am getting tired of seeing the email for them, but I'm glad she's doing it. And that's Representative Doreen Carter. Another one is Representative Darshawn Kendrick. She's out there. Representative Bob Trammell from District 132 in West Georgia. Representative Patty Bickley down in Taylor County. She stays on top of it. Representative, Betty Buckner. She represents parts of the middle Georgia. These people stay out in their communities. They stay out there on a regular basis, and they talk to you. You can pick up the phone, and you can talk to these people. They know what's going on in people's lives in their communities.
Okay. That's what I'm talking about.
These people know what's going on. And happened every last one of these people I spoke of were Democrats. I'm going to be fair. Because I know two or three Republicans that do the same job. And I'm going to give one of them a shout-out. That's John Pizzo. He's District 133 down in West Georgia. He covers South End of Troop County down to Columbus. He keeps up with his people. Now, the majority of his district is Republican, but they see his face. He goes out the pig pickings and everything else and see what's going on. Now, I know Republicans who are in majority Republican districts who don't go out and see their people. They don't. They could care less. They know you're going to elect them. They're going to know you're going to elect them anyway, because they just like what they do. Now, there's others, and I'm only talking about the people that I see. I'm sure there's other ones out there that do a great slam up job of going out there representing their constituencies. But these are the people I see, and I've only, you know, and I don't live in all of that. I've not lived in all of their districts, but I know that I know these people from being a part of the process. They've done that. They do their due diligence. You know, I got to got one more, Ronnie Mabry down in Fayette. He shows his face. He does events.
Well, you know, and I am now one of Ronnie Mabry's constituents. So, Ronnie, if you're listening, yeah, we need to talk. But I think, you know, there's a difference between those candidates who go out and are doing, that's exactly what you should do. You should be voting according to the wishes of all of your constituents, not just a small, you know, group of them. And expect that's the voice of your district. You need to listen to all the voices in your district, whether you agree with them or not, or whether you agree with the political ideology, because lots of times there's blurred lines in between what people believe. And then there's a difference between those who feel that they are entitled to it or who come out and promise you the world. And we see and hear that, and, you know, well, on the Republican side, we're kind of used to it, you know, because they come, but you got to appreciate the Republican side because they really just narrow it to their base, and they throw out that red meat, you know, they open up the slaughterhouse when it comes to the elections, and they're just doling that meat out, and you got to be an idiot to think that at some point the current Republican Party is going to make an appeal to certain demographics such as blacks or Latinos. Not going to happen. And they really, you know, people like, what kind of gets me, people be like, well, you need to be talking about, you know, why aren't you talking about the GOP or anything? We know what's on their plate, and we know they give zero downs about us. They show that not. They don't have to come out and say anything. We see that through their policies. But they're, you know, what gets me is that we have these politicians that come out or who promise the world or ones where we project way too much on, and we set them up for a fall because we, in a sense, set President Obama up for a fall. I'm hoping we don't set Bernie up for a fall and just keep it in mind what he can and cannot do, but we have to realize there are certain things he cannot get done without governors and a Congress and state houses who are going to help him. I mean, we all saw what happened with President Obama and Obamacare. We're still going through it. Georgia is one of the states where Medicaid expansion through the ACA has been blocked. And, I mean, they sat up here. We got videos of them. They're proud of it. They ha-ha, he-he. They just damn happy about it. So,
I don't think Obama failed African-Americans. I think what happened was we don't have clear political objectives, and we just assumed he was going to come in and make everything right. I think we need to have an internal discussion on what it is that we as a group, what is it that we want in terms of development? How do we want to develop? How do we want? We got to ask ourselves, how do we want our community to develop, to be self-sustaining, self-sufficient, and so we can correct some of the issues, that social problems that we have. I didn't really expect too much from him because of who financed him. Big businesses and banks financed his campaign. Mm-hmm. However, he did wink at us because he signed off on the Universal Declaration of Rights to Indigenous Peoples, and that's applicable to our situation. So he did not totally fail us. He did what he was supposed to do at for the people who actually were the meat of his campaign. So I don't fault him for that, and I don't think he failed us. I think we're failing ourselves because we're not politically literate.
And you know, part of it you touched on earlier, the lack of economic power leads to political power.
Exactly.
Without economic power, we really don't have much to wield. You can get out there, and, you know, I'm an activist by at heart, and I love nothing but a good turn up. But you have to keep it in context. You can fall out in the middle of the street all you want. You can sign all the petitions you want. You can click on Facebook or something all you want. That is not going to change. You can chain yourself to something and get locked up. The powers that be, they don't care. As long as you continue to neglect the chipping away at the base of their power, their political power, which they get from economic power that we enable, we can sit out there and we will be like the Israelites wandering in the desert. We will continue to holler while black and brown people continue to die, while they continue to be deported and separated from their families, while we see all of the madness that's going on. You know, my brain, I can't say one more name because I've got too many in my brain already. I'm getting old. I can only hold so much. I am tired of saying people's names, because every single day there's a new one to add. And what I want to hear in this election seat, don't tell me what you can do, but be real with us about what you can't do. Because I think a lot of people out here get it all twisted as to what a person can do, and I don't think they fully know what your representatives in your state houses can and can't do. You know, one of the things we hear a lot about, I am almost 53 years old. One of the things I hear, and I can count on, we're going to create jobs. We're going to fix education. And one of the things, and I got to give Bernie a plug on, is his recent, I believe it was in Iowa, when he talked about not investing in education was really dumb policy. We have to fight for that. And we've got some things going on in Georgia in terms of education that are going to determine our public schools and whether they get, quote, unquote, taken over by the state.
Are you going to do a show on that? Because that's a whole show
in itself,
and I am so interested in that.
I think we are. As a matter of fact, why don't you call it? If you could send us your information on the Down South and Dirty page, just private message us so we can get in touch with you after the show. Yes,
okay.
Ma'am.
Yes, because we got to stay in touch. Okay.
Yes, and because we
especially
have
about that education
that
piece. That's one of my pet peeves. Because I work as an educator, in the public schools system, and I'm so disappointed with some of the things that I see, that I witness in terms of black and brown children. And I have my concerns, and that's something that I'm very interested in advocating for, improvement of the education system.
Well, you know, you may end up being a guest. We may need you as a guest because, I mean, it is a very nuanced conversation we need to have about that, and there's a lot of issues from different perspectives that need to be looked at before we even think about voting for something on the ballot, and the way it is currently worded, it seems very innocuous and innocent, but it has
And what is the name of the page now again?
It is Down South and Dirty.
Down South
Radio.
And Dirty Radio. Just search for it on Facebook, and you'll see a black and white icon.
Okay, and take my number as well, and share it with the other sister as well. Take my number. Okay. I definitely will be reaching out to you all.
Yes. What's your name?
My name is Elena. It is Elena.
Okay, Elena. We so enjoyed you calling in.
Oh, yes. This has been very informative in terms of, you know, the political conversation, because you can't, just don't have people who are, you know, politically astute, who knows what's going on, who knows what to discuss, and, I mean, everything was right on point. The only thing was missing was
tea. We'll bring tea. Next time we'll bring tea. And I'll be in the back with a little flask in the trunk.
Okay.
Okay. So,
okay.
But we welcome you to our porch anytime. Come and sit with us a spell. But
okay.
Scout, we've got what, about a minute left?
We're about down to 10 seconds.
Oh,
everybody, this is Down South and Birdie. We'll see y'all next Sunday. Peace.
Peace.